This is the State of Things broadcasting from Blue Ridge Public Radio in downtown Asheville. I'm Frank Stachow. So the term Appalachian, what does that bring up for you? Vivid images of the mountains, people playing banjos, playing the dulcimer, weaving baskets, a distinct culture and lifestyle, certainly all their own. What may not come to mind would be the faces of African Americans. The story of Appalachian culture has largely been the story of white folks who live in the mountains. And that troubled a group of artists and scholars who've made it their mission to spotlight the contributions of black artists. They coined the term Afrolachian. Afrolachian movement includes writers, musicians, and artists who have very much contributed to Appalachian culture. Marie T. Cochran is an artist, educator, and founding curator of the Afrolachian Artist Project. She's going to lead a panel discussion called Crafting Afrolachia. It's a partnership with the Center for Craft, and it's all part of UNC Asheville's 5th Annual African Americans in Western North Carolina and Southern Appalachian Conference. By the way, you can check out our live stream of today's show on our Facebook page. Marie Cochran, welcome. Good to have you here.
Glad to be here in North Carolina.
Now, talk about this term, the birth of the term Afrolachia.
Well, there were a group of Kentucky writers that challenged just that description that you gave at the beginning of the segment. And rather than just complaining about it or feeling like there was no opportunity for them to, counteract that stereotype, they did something about it. And Frank X. Walker was the leading force in this group of young writers, and they knew each other because they were working together at the University of Kentucky. Frank went on to be the poet, first African-American poet laureate for the state of Kentucky, and the rest is history. There are wonderful folks like Crystal Good, various people, Crystal Wilkinson, who's still in Kentucky. And I shouldn't even have started trying to name names, but you can look them up because they have celebrated about 25 years of collaborating together.
Well, let's talk about the name Marie T. Cochran and talk about how you got involved in this, right?
Okay. Well, it was right here in Asheville because I went to hear Frank X. Walker read. And then afterwards, we were talking and I just happened to have this notion. I said, well, you know, there's the writers, there are musicians like the Carolina Chocolate Drops. They just won the Grammy. I know Don Flemons real well, continue to know him. And I said, well, what about artists? And he said, well, why don't you do something about it? And that's why I'm here. So,
and when we talk about the arts, forgive me for interrupting, but sure. I'm thinking about this now because I named a few things in that introduction that might be seen as kind of folk art and craft, not to dismiss it at all. But is there a distinction to be made in the movement, that in the Afrolachian movement, between things like handicraft that might be passed down from generations and a different kind of cultivated art?
No, is the quick answer, because the whole thing about, especially for contemporary makers, artists, artisans, whatever way we want to describe ourselves, there is no distinction. There is no high or low. That's the whole point, because even this whole notion of insider, outsider, you know, like you said, refined or whatever, it's really about this notion that people are creative and they can make things, and they can make things happen. So personally, my entry as a first-generation college student was actually that I had known people making things who had never been to school. So it really is about the final product and how it moves you and inspires you.
And talk about, if we're talking about a movement that intends to spotlight the contributions, let's do some of that now. Who would you include in this, and who has been lost in the discussion about Appalachian culture, who we should know about and include now?
Well, just to finish up on, you know, how I got into this, after I, you know, was given that kind of the marching orders by Frank, I was invited to present at the first Afrolachian symposium back in 2011. And I first put together a PowerPoint, and by putting the PowerPoint together, I was identifying all these wonderful artists like Viola Spells, who I'm looking at across the room here at our table, and Valeria Watson, who is also an artist that I've worked with. And from there, doing the presentation, I met people from the August Wilson Center. And later that fall, I put together an exhibition. So it's first to ask the question.
Yeah.
So that's where it begins.
And tell us more about that exhibition, because, again, that'll give us a deeper picture of what we're talking about here.
Well, it was a group of artists that I had found through talking to people, internet searches, but mainly making studio visits, because today is like the 7th anniversary of me going to Kentucky to Ed Hamilton's studio and, choosing work for the show. People like Bing Davis, who's from Greer, South Carolina, but now is doing incredible work in Dayton, Ohio, and he's one of our elders. Then there are artists like the late Sammy Nicely, who was doing this work even before the word was invented, from East Tennessee. So, like I said before, there were artists from all over. We had artists from West Virginia as well. So, it's really asking the question and then realizing that there is something missing from the picture.
I'm talking to Marie T. Cochran, who's the founding curator of the Afro-Latchian Artist Project, going to lead a panel discussion in partnership with the Center for Craft called Crafting Afro-Latcha, which takes place Saturday, October 20th, during UNC Asheville's 5th Annual African Americans in Western North Carolina and Southern Appalachian Conference. And you made reference to two of the artists who are still among us today and still working very hard at this whole project. And I want to introduce a couple of them. Valeria Watson is a painter and multimedia artist. Valeria, welcome to you.
Thank you. Hello.
And Viola Spells is here, a jewelry designer and owner of Zenobia Studio in Asheville. Hello.
Hello.
Viola, good to talk with you. Valeria, let me put a question to you. What makes your work, do you think, Afro-Latchian?
Afro-Latchian to me is country, the country. You know, we're people that were farmers and had chickens, and I have goats, and it's something about retaining the memory of connection to the land.
Describe your work for us. And as you do, I'm wondering to what extent, because I know that we like to think about artists, whether they're writers or visual artists or jewelry makers, as somehow tethered to their place. But there's a way in which it doesn't necessarily have to always be about the mountains. And so I'm wondering to what extent Appalachia influences your work and to what extent you don't think it needs to. I mean, give us a sense of your work.
Well, the work is about me, and I feel that's what I have in common with the rest of the Afro-Latchian. It's part about our identity, you know, being born in segregation and just doing what comes naturally makes it Afro-Latchian, because I have a viewpoint that's distinctly different from a regular Appalachian artist.
Viola, you make jewelry. Tell us about your work.
Well, I do crochet wire, and I was inspired by my grandmother who lived in rural Kentucky. And she crocheted, and we had all these doilies around the house. And my mother also crocheted. So I would like to think that from that, I was inspired. Also, growing up in Asheville, when they had the first arts and crafts fair here, which was mostly Appalachian arts, I went to it. I was maybe about 16 years old, and I went to it, and I was very inspired by that. I really wanted to do something with my hands, but I didn't really want to do Appalachian-type art, but I didn't really know what then, but I was really inspired by their work.
Yeah, interesting. I mean, give us a sense of what it was you saw that, in a sense, didn't inspire you to imitate, but inspired you to do that kind of work.
Well, they had chair making. Mm-hmm. They had quilting, which my grandmother also, she made quilts also. Those are the two main things. I think they also had pottery, which I do some clay work, but mostly through my sculpture work. So just walking around the Civic Center, looking at all the work, thinking, you know, that how great it would be to be able to make something with your hands, that I was really moved by that.
Marie, talk about the importance of that. If you think about how representation plays a part in that, I mean, the idea that we are inspired by the environment around us, if we don't see ourselves in it, it might be a little bit more difficult. Viola obviously felt something deep inside that said, well, I can do this, even though I'm not going to be making chairs or whittling walking sticks. But not everybody does. And representation, I would think, plays an important part in that inspiration.
I think that's the driving force for me because, you know, I'm also a visual artist, and I've been chatting with some of the artists about why I decided to focus on being a curator, because as a professor also teaching American art history and various other courses, I realized that, you know, someone needed to step forward and just put this, you know, frame around the work and put the focus on the people. Even like Valeria said, you know, it being about you as a person of color is profound, because it also expands the definition of what it is not only to be a person of African descent, but to be a person. So, you know, it's interesting too, because we've been defined as African Americans as laborers, but then where is that today? You know, it's like a lot of times, you know, a lot of people had said, you know, Anonymous was an artist. Okay, Anonymous very often were the people who were not acknowledged to be able to sign the work or be able to retain the work in their families. And this is definitely a way that we can, you know, kind of go back and reclaim that in our contemporary lives.
Valeria, you've been able to mix art and craft in a lot of ways in your immersive experiences. I would like you to talk about particularly your work, Reparations for Nina.
Yes, that was an exciting opportunity in Tryon, where Nina Simone was born. And I looked at it as going to Nina Simone's house, feeling her, talking to her, taking photographs of models there. And then the upstairs art space allowed me to just make that an immersive experience. So you could go into Nina Simone's house, but it was made out of fabric and paper, and there was like a bedroom and a civil rights room. So it was totally imaginary, and it especially found a target in women. Women said, oh, I love sitting in the kitchen where I had aprons hanging and things to evoke the memory of a time when Nina was a girl, when I was a girl, when women who are from the country were girls, and the kind of things we identified with, and music. And I integrated textiles, and I just like to layer upon layer. So what I like to do is recreate an environment that doesn't exist. So I'm just making my world one installation at a time.
A world that doesn't exist, but in many ways representing the complexity of this whole story. If Afro-Latchen is about being from a place and perhaps reflecting the character of the place, an artist like Nina Simone, I think, qualifies as an Afro-Latchen artist, and yet we don't really associate the fact that we now know her home is a national treasure in Tryon, North Carolina. Certainly her music doesn't.
And she went to school at Allen High.
There you go. And all of that is part of who she is. And yet in her music, we don't necessarily hear banjo and clogging when she's creating her music. And yet very definitely Afro-Latchen, which suggests the multimedia. I mean, the fact that you use so many textures and so many different materials is a way of saying, whether you intended it or not, good old Frank, that's what he saw in the work. So you're stuck with my my interpretation. But it does seem like gets to some of the complexity of this.
Yeah, I identify with Nina also because she was classically trained. I have a master's from Columbia University in New York City and, you know, worked off Broadway and worked in Hollywood. But I take all of that and use those skills I learned and sometimes reverse them to create an environment that's loving to me or loving for women, which a lot of times we don't experience in the outer world.
Marie, it seems like it's important on a couple of levels to be shining this kind of light on the subject. On the one hand, for those of us who weren't aware of it and weren't paying attention, now we are. But in the community outside African American communities, but within African American communities, for people that didn't know, again, to be inspired and say, "Oh, we were part of this stuff."
Well, I'm glad that the conversation's taking this turn, because it really is talking about breaking all kinds of boundaries and boxes, because quite honestly, I think they're, you know, a couple, and this may sound a little controversial, but there are a couple of people who are not African American who live in the region who would like to play around with a lot of different issues outside of those stereotypes. Even taking the banjo and putting it into another setting, whether it's, you know, as the Carolina Chocolate Drops did, you know, doing a hip hop version of, you know, working with the musicians that of the instruments that are traditionally associated with a certain kind of bluegrass music. Because as Valeria said, and I was even realizing with Viola's background, you know, I'm first generation college student, but I went to UGA and then I went off to the School of the Art Institute in Chicago. But I also honor my grandparents, my father, who was really the first introduction to art for me because he worked around with antique cars and restored them and did interesting painting styles and with them and, you know, the different kinds of things that would happen in my community that I honor and embrace. So that's, you know, I want to have these wonderful conversations with the work.
Well, and it's very much is in what you're saying here, it's very much about moving these traditions forward. So it's not creating a museum for the stuff we did so
right.
much as understanding we did this stuff and it's moving forward. Viola, I think your work reflects that beautifully. I wonder if in this digital age, young girls come up to you when they see your stand and see your beautiful jewelry. You've brought examples of it here, and it's absolutely stunning to see the work that you've done and the fine work in creating these pieces. Do little girls come up to you and say, how do I do that?
No, they haven't really come up and said, how do I do that? But they like it, and they like the colors. They are drawn to it. And they usually ask their mother if they could get a bracelet or something. You usually start out with the bracelet. And then sometimes I'm in the studio and I'm actually working. I try to create while I'm there so that when they do pass through that they can see me doing the work and maybe want to do that. Because actually I learned how to crochet as a Girl Scout right here in Asheville.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, it does. I understand that in the digital age, really all you have to do is work your thumbs. But this actually, all 10 digits need to be in play, I think, most of the time.
Well, I will say really quickly, you know, that I began, you know, with showing this work by, you know, so-called fine artists. And then I was really excited about the opportunity to work with the Center for Craft to do the panel because I would like to create opportunities so that young people can take the time to have Zen moments in their life and put in labor into the process so that they can make things. There's a young man who's actually a furniture maker who's going to be on the panel. And, you know, that's the way that we reach that next generation.
Tell me more about the panel, Crafting Afro-Latcha, the roundtable discussion. What can people expect?
A wonderful expansion of this conversation. But I was just telling Viola, you know, I wanted them to give some trade secrets, some of the challenges that they faced, mm-hmm. How they came to do the work, because the three particular artists for this particular panel are practicing full time. It's not just something that they do on, you know, in their spare time as a hobby, you know. And even though Valeria is not on the panel, I know that she eats, drinks, and sleeps her work. And mm-hmm. to me, I think that as much as possible, especially in these times, people need to see all of these different acts of liberation and freedom.
I want to thank all of you for being on our program today. Marie T. Cochran is the founding curator of the Afro-Latchian Artist Project. Valeria Watson is a painter and multimedia artist. Viola Spells is a jewelry designer and owner of Zenobia Studio in Asheville. Thank all of you for being on the program.
Glad to be here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Marie T. Cochran and Viola Spells are going to be part of that panel discussion called Crafting Afro-Latcha. It's a partnership with the Center for Craft. It takes place Sunday, October 20th, during UNC Asheville's 5th Annual African American in Western North Carolina and Southern Appalachia Conference. We've got all the information at our website, stateofthings.org. Just ahead, the music of Natural Born Leaders. Stay tuned.
Not living in-